This podcast is a proud member of the Network of One Podcast. And also the Freak Network at thefreaknetwork.com.
On today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 123, The Wealthiest, HIV, FBI, and a clean floor. All of this and more. The Flatus Show with Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. And you know what that low-calorie carbonated beverage is, too, because I revealed that last week. Welcome to the Flatus Show. This is Kenty, your host, and my co-host, Jose, is on a trip. He's out of the house. He got on the plane. He left last week. And he's going to tour America before he comes back at the end of the month and gives me his decision, or gives the producers his decision as to whether he is going to stay with the show or not. There's some talk on the internet that Jose is going to have his own show called the Sleeping Dog Podcast, but you know, who knows? You know, can he do it himself? So anyway, my co-host this week, filling in for Jose, is Francois, the Canadian migrant sound technician, the mute Canadian migrant sound technician, and he's on the couch here in the studio, taking a nap. So we welcome you both to the Flatus Show. This is a great episode this week. Another segment of De Tocqueville, and that'll be great, right? Mm-hmm. So, let's talk a little bit. I have been reading. There's a lot going on. It's a fact, right? A lot is always going on. But for me, you know, I've been very busy at work. I have, been involved with some projects at work, doing a crap load more work than I have ever done before. And I don't mind, because I like being busy and doing the work. And so I have been busy. Pardon me. So it's hard for me to get together these shows, because usually I have more time to do some thinking on the train, but I've been sleeping. It could also be because I'm working out every other day, and you know, that tires you out. The other day, let me tell you about working out. I went to the Y. I think I'd go to the YMCA, and I think I told you that I discovered there's this weight training room that they have in the basement. I didn't even know there was this basement. This bottom floor. I thought the very bottom floor was the pool. But no, that's the second floor, I guess. So I go down to the basement and find this gym. And it's nice. It really has great equipment. It has like the, what I was looking for was a squat rack, but you know, they have some really great leg machines there. They have this like, I think it's called a hack squat machine. So I've been using that, and I've been like, I can really pump up, I can really add the weight, because doing regular squats without a squat rack, it's hard to load the bar with heavier weights, though I really want to see a squat rack, down there, or somewhere upstairs, I don't care, either place, just somewhere where there's a squat rack. But for right now, I'm using this machine. And I can do all my workout down there because there's a place where I can do my bench presses and all my other exercises. So where am I going with this? So anyway, the other day, I finished my workout. and I'm taking the shower. I just felt the littlest bit nauseous. And I've heard about this. It's for people who work out really hard. And I do. You know, when I do a workout, I'm not, you know, I go for the guns, the full gun, whatever that saying is, the gusto. I go with full gusto. I don't moderate. It's not anything, there's nothing moderate about my workout. I want to do it, you know, I want to do it as heavy as I can, lift as heavy as I can, and, you know, to gain more strength and power and grow and be more strong. Let's be stronger, you know. And in doing that, I'm building my developing muscle and burning more fat, and it's really exciting. So I can, you know, it's in, you know, I take my log to the gym every time I go. I log what I do, and I can see, you know, where the increases I've made. So I worked out really hard that day, and I felt the littlest bit nauseous. But I have read about this. This is a normal reaction. So I was fine after I sat down for a little bit. And sounds like John's coming home. So today I had a workout, really great workout, and my legs were just like blasted the muscles in my legs. And that's like the biggest, my legs are are responding very well. So that's enough for exercise. I recommend if my listeners do exercise, that they don't go namby-pamby and think that, you know, moderate exercise is all that in a bag of chips. Because, I mean, any exercise is better than none, right? But, you know, measure your progress, you know. Try to do better, you know, run faster than you did before or lift heavier than you did before. But, you hear that in the background? We're actually babysitting our neighbor's dog, who sounds exactly like Jose, because, you know, Jose is on a trip across America, and as I said earlier, and he's going to be flying into Columbus, Ohio, I understand, first, and then, you know, who knows where he'll show up. He's going to go across the country, all over the place. And he says he's going to try to visit all the podcasters that listen to us, you know, in his own personal friends that he met on the internet doing social networking. So I have been reading, as I am wont to do, a couple books. One book, which I recommend, it's a selection of essays written by St. Doris Lessing. I call her St. Doris. It's called Prisons We Choose to Live Inside, and it's a remarkable book, and there are 5 essays, and what does it do? This book tells us we need to look at ourselves with truthful eyes instead of pretending what reality is, look at reality straightforward and realize what human beings are, how human beings react in group settings, what our mindset is really. And basically is that, she says, we are all, it's about being brainwashed. And either it's by politicians or advertisers, we're all capable of being brainwashed and probably are brainwashed. And to a certain extent, that's, you know, natural because that's just the way it is. However, she was saying, for example, being desensitized to violence because of all the movies that are out there. We just see it all the time that we're desensitized to violence. She's saying that that's not necessarily a plot, you know? Somebody's plotting to desensitize everybody of violence. That's just an extension of technology, okay? And these are one of the hidden things about technology, you know? how do we know how something like the internet's really going to affect humanity in 20 years, you know? Because it could, there could be something about, let's say, a new technology, let's say the internet, for example. It could be any new technology, but let's say that there is something about this new technology which activates a part of our humanness that we didn't know before. And in the case of what she's saying is that, you know, groups can be controlled. That's just the we want to be in groups, and we can be manipulated. And to be aware of that, I mean, that's just the fact. And there are people who do it on purpose. I mean, advertisers, you know, want to sell you whatever they have on there, whatever they're trying to sell. Politicians use these techniques to sell their office, you know, to get votes. So it's nothing to be afraid of. It's just a fact, you know, something we have to realize about ourselves. It's a fact of life, you know, and, you know, people are so stupid. I mean, you know, when you tell a child, like, you know, where babies come from, some parents will say, oh, it's the stork, or we came from a cabbage patch. Well, we didn't come from a cabbage patch, and we didn't come from a stork. This is another, you know, the father inseminated the mother, and, you know, the baby grew in the mother's uterus and was born, you know. And yet, there's all these lies about, and some would call them white lies, but, the, you know, it's a lie nevertheless about humanity, about humans. And I think this is another thing, which is people don't want to think about or admit, but that we can be controlled whether we like it or not, and have been and probably are. And, you know, I'm aware that, you know, we all can be. I can be, you can be. So that's all I'm saying, is that really think about it, okay? Be aware of it. I think this is what William Burroughs was fighting against, this mind control, because, you know, he wrote his book, Naked Lunch, I think it was 57. It was the late 50s, okay? In 1957, there was another book, which I'm reading, was released by Vance Packard, called The Hidden Persuaders, and he talks about how advertisers use brainwashing techniques they use the information gleaned from sociology and psychology to persuade, to control, basically, people through advertising, and why they target children. Because what happens is that the children, right, are the future consumers. So they set up, advertisers love marketing to children because it seeds the future for future buying patterns. That's the theory. Okay. I know it sounds a little bit like, you know, Batman and Robin with, like, you know, control and stuff. And I'm not saying that there is any kind of, like, plot, okay? But let's face it. I mean, this is what I'm saying, is that this tendency for humans to want to be in groups, to be brainwashed, to be hypnotized, right, is part of being human. Okay, you can't escape from it. Okay, and it is also true that, you know, people can use this technology, these ideas, this knowledge about how humans behave, and use it for their own benefit. All I'm saying, and like Doris Lessing says in here, is to be aware of this tendency in humans to understand. So if you're in a position where there's a mob, right, keep a cool head. Don't get involved with it. I mean, you know, it's like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, she talks about Rhodesia, and how, you know, there was the white supremacist people there. I mean, that was all white government, and then it, you know, changed. Okay, but she was saying it's like this craziness goes on in these political climates, and it's basically you know, being brainwashed with these certain ideas. It's the prisons we choose to live inside and what we accept, you know, what we allow to control us. So all I'm saying, kids, is be aware of that, and be aware of it especially during this next year, because, you know, we have a political presidential campaign, you know, and believe me that the president, these presidential candidates will, you know, will use this stuff on you, okay? Look at their records. Look at the people's records. Don't, if they smile and they sound nice, that's fine, but that's not something you should be basing your vote on. You should be basing your vote on what they do, what they have done in their record. Now, you know, Barack Obama has no record, so to speak. I mean, he's new. He's really a wild card. And I wouldn't vote for him because he's a wild card, because we really don't know much about him. Clinton, we know about. We know about Huckabee, as we'll find out more about Huckabee today. We know about all these other people. They have a history, a political history. Will they do the things we want them to? I mean, who knows? You know, no one knows. You know, everybody has free will. They can change their mind. But all I'm saying is don't go for the – did I hit that? I hope it didn't make too much of a noise. Don't, you know, go beyond the surface, okay? And be aware. You know, if you start sounding like somebody who is a real fanatic, then you've probably been brainwashed. That's all I have to say about that. Okay, so anyway, that's what I'm into. Oh, let's see here. I'm going to also, over the next few weeks, along with the Tocqueville, have a little segment on Zoroaster. How do you pronounce it? So if I look at it, I can pronounce it. Let's see here, Zoroastrianism, and I think it's a fascinating little religion. I mean, not many people practice it, and but it's fascinating. So I think you'll find out why, because, you know, I like religion and stuff like that. And, not that I believe in Zoroastrianism, but we'll get onto that. But okay, let's continue. I got an email from Kristen Oblivion, and she sent me a new Little Audrey story. So I'm not playing it today because Little Audrey and the 5-Minute Mystery are on hiatus while I do Tocqueville. But you will hear that later. But thank you, Kristen. I loved it. I think I emailed you. I hope I did. And there's some other new things I put onto the site, onto the show today, so you'll hear those. But now I have a phone call. Hold on, drop my notes. Oh. I have a phone call from none other but Mr. J.W. Richards.
Hey, Kenji, this is J.W. from Metric Society Radio. A couple of things. You mentioned a couple shows back you weren't sure who was the denomination that did not celebrate birthdays, Adventists or Jehovah's Witnesses. I would definitely have to say, being or self-growing up a Seventh-day Adventist, there would be Jehovah's Witnesses, because I had some members in my family, and they just were not a fan of birthdays. It was surrounding the whole thing with King Herod and getting the head of John the Baptist, you know, for her birthday. They just decided not to celebrate birthdays. At least that's the story that I had always been told. So, therefore, the whole King Herod story with getting the head of John the Baptist on a plate made things pretty sour for celebrating birthdays. But that would be Jehovah's Witnesses, not Seventh-day Adventist, or at least not the mainline Seventh-day Adventist. I don't know. I'm sure there were other factions of people who had their own reasons for not celebrating birthdays. Concerning your more recent show dealing with certain things that you're eating and drinking, I think there are some differences when you're dealing with vegetarians as opposed to meat eaters. There are certain things that vegetarians can take in and don't have quite the same effect on the body as meat eaters. And unfortunately, I do not have any statistics to back that up or Wikipedia for all of your information needs. I would just say that every person's body is definitely like a combination lock. You'll hear a little bit more about that on my show. And so you kind of have to find out exactly what works for you. And definitely if you are a meat eater, there are certain things that you probably should abstain from or not do as much of, as opposed to someone who's a vegetarian and can take a little bit more. With that said, now I'm not advocating that someone just go crazy then on Cokes and on chips and salsa and other things that are, you know, potentially bad for you. I mean, anything out of moderation has the potential to be bad. So, but I know I do drink my share of Cokes, not near enough water. And I do have my share of coffee, and it doesn't really have the, you know, same effect on me that it may have on some. It's caffeinated, and I can drink a little bit more of it. I mean, I don't really do the lattes, because when you do the lattes at Starbucks and all these other places, it's really, they're really a bit too much. But I'm talking about just straight coffee, and it works fine for me. So with that, keep doing the shows, loving what you're doing. Take care. Bye now.
Thank you, JW. He answered, he responded to two things. Jehovah's Witnesses do not celebrate birthdays. Seventh-day Adventists do. And I didn't know why Jehovah's Witnesses didn't celebrate birthdays, because Muslims, I don't think, celebrate birthdays either, and that's because you're not supposed to glorify yourself, I believe, is the reason why Muslims don't celebrate birthdays. And I just figured it was a similar sort of thing for Jehovah's Witnesses. I didn't know it had anything to do with John the Baptist. Now, I know that story too, and I don't realize that it was Salome's birthday. I thought it was just some party that Herod had. So maybe if the Jehovah's Witnesses knew that it wasn't Salome's birthday, that, you know, maybe then they would have their birthdays. They would probably celebrate them, right? They should listen to Richard Strauss's opera Salome, and they'll know all about it. It wasn't a birthday. It was just a celebration. I mean, Salome was a weird kid anyway, so. And JW also brings up talking about, I was talking about sodas and stuff. Don't drink sodas. But, I mean, drinking too much sugary stuff is bad for you anyway. I mean, that's just common sense. We've known it for years, despite what advertisers try to sell us, okay? But he does say, it's interesting, is that there's probably a difference. There is a difference. I mean, everybody's body reacts differently. But at the same time, we're all human, so it can't be all that different. But it was interesting is that you talked about vegetarians and meat eaters and how their bodies react. And I would imagine that your body's process, the vegetarians process food differently than meat eaters, simply because it has a different stress on it. I mean, there's no, you eat, I mean, a meat person eats meat, I mean, they're getting a load of protein in a small volume, okay? Like, for example, 100 grams of chicken, right, has about, I don't know what it was, 36 grams of protein, where I'm sure that you'd have to have more than 100 grams of lentils to have that much protein in a serving. But, you know, who knows? Who knows? I'm not an expert. I'm just guessing. But it's interesting that you brought that up. Coffee is bad. I don't care what you think. Of course, everybody has things responds differently. And if you can drink coffee, JW, I mean, that's fine. You know, for me, coffee is a killer. I mean, you know, I could drink 1 6-ounce cup of coffee a day if I wanted to. But even then, the caffeine builds up in my system. So I just try to avoid it altogether. But occasionally I like a nice cup of just regular coffee. Percolated coffee, because that's my favorite kind. I hate the drip. And I love perked coffee, and a nice cup of perked coffee with a, you know, piece of dessert is nice occasionally. But I drink water most of the day, or I have a tea. What I use with my tea bag, I have a tea bag. I use one tea bag, and I use it for 2 cups of hot water. 16 ounces of hot water. And and I make it fairly light, and you know, add a little bit of milk to it, and then I, you know, drink that. You know, I'm at work, so that's what I do. And it doesn't seem to bother me, maybe because I make it fairly weak. Sorry, Francois. Oh, I thought he was staring over there. He just turned over. Yeah. Okay. What else do we have today? I think that will be all I wanted to talk about. But I hope everybody's great. And, you know, enjoy yourself. You know. Whatever. hopefully I'll have this year. I can't wait. I don't know yet, but I'll let you know soon if I'm going to be making my trip across America, and we'll see what I can do. But until then, this is Kenty from The Flata Show, and on with the show.
He's believed to have shot and killed an armored car guard and getting away with $56,000. And now Jason Derek Brown is on the FBI's top 10 list.
Jason Brown is considered armed and extremely dangerous. In fact, he is believed to be carrying a Glock 45 caliber handgun.
Special Agent Ralph Thomas of the FBI's Criminal Investigative Division.
The FBI is offering a reward up to $100,000 for information that would lead directly to his arrest.
Thomas says Brown's picture and description information are up on the internet for you.
Brown's wanted flyer, as well as wanted flyers of other top 10 fugitives and other dangerous criminals, can be located on the FBI webpage, which is FBI.gov.
Have information? Call the FBI. If you're outside the United States and know anything about Jason Derek Brown, contact the nearest consulate or U.S. embassy. I'm Neil Schiff of the Bureau, and that's what's happening at the FBI this week.
From the jelly I made this past fall. I just can't get them off of the floor. Oh my god!
I speak. And I am Span.
That's Stillian Spanish. Where did you two come from?
Senor, we come from advertisement hell.
Really?
Try this. Speak in Span. Cleanser.
Let me try it. Oh my god, the stains are coming right off the floor! Oh my stars, this is so good! Thank you! Thank you so much! Wait, are you illegal aliens?
Uh-oh, we better go!
Where'd they go?
That's right, folks. If you want a clean, clean, clean floor, try new Spick and Span Floor Cleanser.
You stand convicted of assholism.
This week's asshole is Christopher Lee McGuinn of Tyler, Texas. And he's an asshole for killing his girlfriend, Jana Shear, and then cooking and eating her. Well, at least he called 911. Another honorary asshole of the week is Mike Huckabee, for the following reason. Listen to this little skit from Rebecca Ney of Tranny Rec Radio, and you'll know why.
Mike Huckabee, and Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Thank you very much, Chris. Great to be back.
As you rise in the polls, I don't have to tell you that your past is becoming more of an issue. It now turns out that when you ran for the Senate back in 1992, you called for quarantining AIDS patients. You opposed increased federal funding to find a cure. Do you stand by any of that now, Governor?
I called for quarantines. I'm going to simply say that that was exactly what I said. I don't run from it, don't recant from it.
Do you have HIV or
the AIDS?
Ew, gross.
Then Mike Huckabee has the answer for you. Huckabee's HIV Camp. For the small price of your freedom and livelihood, you can enter into Huckabee's HIV Camp. Just listen to this compelling testimonial from a longtime camp survivor.
I got the HIV in the 80s due to my fondness for necrobestial anal butt sex, and I was immediately sent to Huckabee's HIV camp. I have to say, this has been the best experience of my whole life. There are so many dead animals around here to ass rape that the fun will never stop. Thanks, Huckabee.
What more can you ask from a compassionate presidential candidate? Get your filthy, contaminated ass over to Huckabee's HIV camp today.
I called for quarantines.
Assholism!
Beaumont and I had not been in America long before we noticed that the first and most intense passion that is produced by equality is the love of that same equality. Indeed, everybody has remarked that now, in 1831, and especially in our native France, this passion for equality is every day gaining ground in the human heart. But the principle may be established in civil society without prevailing in the political world. In America, there is a good deal of both, and the signs of both are to be found everywhere in society.
One class, one price. But the best cars are, of course, reserved for ladies and folks with them. The roughest character understands that a lady, and I need hardly tell Frenchmen that any woman is a lady, has an absolute right to the front seat at the show, the head of the table, the best cabin, and so forth. Rich or poor, mistress or maid, those are her rights as an American female. And mark this, one lone female, old or young, pretty or ugly, may travel from one end of the United States to the other and find nothing but respect from every man she meets.
Well, it's true. Equality of conditions and greater mildness in customs are related to each other. So I certainly can't admit that there is nothing commendable in the manners of a democratic people. In a democratic age, men rarely sacrifice themselves for one another. But they do display general compassion for the human race.
Only because of equality, Tocqueville. The same man who's full of humanity towards his fellow creatures when they're his equals becomes insensible to afflictions as soon as that equality ceases.
Ah, but wait, Beaumont. There are servants in American society, and they are well treated. How do you explain that? They aren't even called servants. What do they call them?
The help. They don't call them servants because they don't think of them as servants. Not as we think of servants in France. In a democracy, at any moment, a servant may become a master. The servant is therefore not a different man from the master. They talk familiarly to each other. They eat with each other. To give a man a tip would insult and humiliate him.
One evening, gentlemen, I was at the house of the president of Harvard University. We were waited on at tea by the butler, one of the president's help, who's also a major of the militia. Now, on cavalry days, when guests are invited to dine with the regiment, the major dresses in his regimentals, takes the head of the table, and has the president of the Harvard at his right hand.
And there is no embarrassment?
Not a bit on either side. And when the toasts are over, he goes home, takes off his regimentals, and waits on everybody at tea, and still no embarrassment. For all honest callings are honorable. That gentleman is democracy.
The Flatist Show.
That, indeed, is democracy, which does not attach men deeply to one another, but places their habitual relations on a much easier footing.
Men, but what about women?
We are in America, Beaumont. Ladies.
Oh, I beg your pardon, ladies. Well, what about them?
Really, Beaumont, to judge from your intent observation, I should have thought you were the authority on American ladies.
And I won't have a word said against them. They are paragons of virtue. It really is remarkable. Every American lady is a guardian of morality.
True enough. And Americans respect and admire them, without, however, having much time for them. Americans are so busy, restless, even in the midst of their prosperity. And yet, you know, Beaumont, the Americans are the freest and the most enlightened men in the world today, in spite of their being so serious, even in their pleasures. I must say, Mr. Livingstone, that I am finding this a charming party.
I usually find this kind of affair pretty dull myself.
It is a social affair, and it has social interest.
Your friend, Mr. Beaumont, seems to be enjoying himself.
He's already an admirer of American ladies. So indeed am I. We find them very fresh and natural.
You will also find them, sir, very moral.
Well, that I am sure.
You had better be very sure. Our ladies have free and open manners, but their standard of morality is high, very high. Extremely high. Exceedingly high. Excessively high.
I assure you, sir, neither I nor my friend will ever have occasion to test the truth of your assertion.
Good. Saves misunderstandings. And one of the drawbacks of American society is that it has a short way with misunderstanding.
One of the drawbacks? Are there others?
Well, I shouldn't tell you, but I will. There are drawbacks, yes. In my opinion, the chief drawback is the want of intellectual tone.
In society everywhere, surely, brainlessness is set at a premium.
Oh, I can still remember, Mr. Tocqueville, when I was young, having seen this country peopled with rich proprietors who lived on their lands in the States. They cultivated the mind and followed certain traditions of thought and manners. Now then, this inheritance law, giving all the heirs equal shares in the estate, has constantly worked to destroy and redistribute the fortunes. Their ideals became lost and will soon become extinct. Land changes hands with unbelievable speed. No one has time to become attached to a place. The people have no roots in the country. Everyone has to resort to practical work, to trade, to maintain himself in the position his father occupied.
Is there anything in America resembling the prestige of landed proprietors?
No, sir. A man only counts for what he himself is worth.
How do the wealthy classes like this?
Well, you might as well put up with it, since there's no way of preventing it.
In that case, is there not hard feeling between the wealthy classes and the rest of the people?
None whatsoever. All classes, without exception, took part in the War of Independence. Since then, the power of democracy has been so great and so invincible that no one has spoken against it. And in general, the people as a whole elect to office the wealthiest and the best educated.
Oh, I see. Of course, what strikes me most in America is the extreme equality in social relationships. The rich man and the laborer shake hands publicly in the street.
Equality, yes. Yes, we have equality, a great deal of it. But perhaps just a little less than you might suppose at first glance. The rich don't have to sacrifice their money. They only need to sacrifice their pride. You see, in a democracy, you attach the poor to you not so much by the benefits you give them as by your manners. But these manners are sometimes no more than formal expressions of feeling.
In what way?
Well, in this way. The handshake that you see in the street may mean no more than subscribing yourself at the end of a letter, your very humble servant.
Ah, I understand.
You see, in America, it is vital to be polite to everybody. For everybody has political rights. Of course, here in New York, there's a good deal of financial pride. Among the newly rich, that is. We Americans recognize something that is recognized the whole world over. The aristocracy of money.
Oh, so there is an aristocracy, after all.
Well, if you can use the word aristocracy for a class that changes all the time and has pretensions but no power. Now, sir, let me press you to some punch. Shall we move into the other room?
The horses ran away.
Oh, no, I will not argue about this anymore.
Ah, hello, Beaumont.
What have you found out now?
Opinions in a democracy are by no means unanimous. And you?
That the ladies are charming.
And virtuous.
Oh, that is the greatest part of their charm. I must say that if one were to enter American society with the purpose of accomplishing seductions, one would find one's time largely wasted.
American society, then, has several aspects. Equality, of course. Then, the love of wealth, which makes for monotony in the midst of animation. There are no masters and servants as we know them.
And in no country has such constant care been taken as in America to trace two clearly distinct lines of conduct for the two sexes. and to make them keep pace with one another, but in two pathways that are always distinct.
This, very sensibly, is the way the Americans understand the equality of the sexes, that each should fulfill its respective task in the best possible way. But the public attitude towards American ladies must sometimes be very irksome.
Yes, sir, you can certainly say that. I put in 10 or 12 hours a day in the counting house, and then I find when I go into society that I have to handle the ladies as if they were poor, helpless, pitiable creatures. The ladies must be waited upon, the ladies must be helped. The ladies must be put into the carriage. The ladies must be taken out of the carriage. The ladies...
Do you regret these little attentions, sir?
Regret them? No, I can't say that. But I'd like to have a little more choice about who I bestow them on. You hardly ever get a chance of making yourself agreeable to a particular individual, you know. You just have to worship the lot wholesale.
But as you describe it, the adoration consists of a sort of polytheism in which no particular goddess has a temple dedicated to herself alone.
Yeah, I don't know about that, sir, but I'll tell you this. When an American gentleman meets a lady, he looks upon her as the representative of her sex. And it is to her sex, not to her own peculiar, amiable qualities, that she is indebted for his attention.
You know that wherever there's snow, there's got to be December. And where there's a June, there's a lover's moon. And furthermore, remember, where there's smoke, there's fire. Where there's grass, there's dew. Wherever there's rain, there's a guy to complain. And wherever there's me, there's you. Where there's spark, there's wire. You'll admit it's true. Wherever there's love, there's the coo of the dove. And wherever there's me, there's you. You can be sure that for every cure, there's got to be a pill. And for every spring, there's a robin to sing. And for every Jack, a Jill. Where there's cream, there's coffee. Where there's beef, there's stew. Wherever there's sea, there's a ship, you'll agree. And wherever there's me, there's you. And for every spring, there's a robin to sing, and for every jack, a Jill. Where there's cream, there's coffee. Where there's beef, there's stew. Wherever there's sea, there's a ship, you'll agree. And wherever there's me, there's you.
Equality again, Beaumont. All American ladies must be treated equally.
Hence their high morality?
No. Equality of conditions cannot ever make men chaste, but it may make their immorality less dangerous. No American has the time or opportunity to assail a virtue armed in self-defense. So you will expect to find, at the same time, a great number of courtesans and of virtuous women.
Remember, Tocqueville, our conversation with the gentleman in Boston, when we asked him if it was true that morals are as pure here as they pretend?
Well, let me see. Morals are less good in the lower classes than among the enlightened. However, I think them superior to the same classes in Europe. As for the educated, their morals are as perfect as it is possible to imagine them. I don't believe that there is a single intrigue in Boston society.
Not one?
A woman suspected would be lost. Mind you, the women here are very coquettish. They even display their coquetry with greater boldness than with you, because they know they cannot go beyond a certain point, and no one believes they overstepped the bound. To tell you the truth, gentlemen, I prefer European women with all their weaknesses to the glacial and egotistical virtue of American ladies.
How do these young women learn to be so virtuous? What is their education like? To begin with, of course, paternal authority is strangely lacking.
Whenever we hear of elopements, public sympathy is almost always with the daughter and against the father.
An American girl has scarcely ceased to be a child when she already thinks for herself, speaks with freedom, and acts on her own impulse.
But the education of young girls is not without its peculiarities. As you would know if you were to hear a group of ladies talking.
Listen to that piano. Surely that girl knows nothing about music. She's been practicing that same piece ever so long.
That's a fact. My daughter went to the same school with her. And except for astronomy and trigonometry, Susan beat her in everything. Susan can play the storm. And her music master tells me when a young lady can once do that, she can do anything.
Oh, Ma.
And she's doing just as well in history. How far have you got with it, Susan?
About two-thirds through with the book. But how queer you talk, Ma.
Pray, madame, what boarding school is it your daughter went to?
It's kept by the Mrs. Jones, 3 miles from Albany.
And what branches are taught in that school?
Susan, you tell the gentleman.
We had reading, writing, spelling, arithmetic, grammar, geography, history, maps, the globe, algebra, geometry, trigonometry, astronomy, natural philosophy, chemistry, botany, mineralogy, geology, and zoology in the morning. And dancing, drawing, painting, French, Italian, Spanish, and German in the afternoon. Greek and the higher branches of mathematics were only studied by the tall girls.
And how many masters were there for teaching all that?
Oh, the two Mrs. Jones teach everything. They wouldn't allow a gentleman to enter the house.
I know this to be a fact. And that's the reason their school is so popular. It is principally on the score of morality I sent Susan there.
And what is the usual age of the young ladies?
Oh, they take them from the age of 5 to the age of 18.
Well, madame, I trust that your daughter will marry a gentleman capable of appreciating her education.
And yet it is so difficult to judge of men in these times. There was not one girl of 10 of my acquaintance knew a word of Latin and mathematics. And yet we all married respectable men. But they say this is the progress of education. And I don't wish Susan to be inferior to other girls. Boys don't cost half as much. They learn everything they want at the counting house. And what they learn there sticks to them as long as they live.
American education, even at its best, tends to make cold and virtuous women instead of affectionate wives and agreeable companions to man. Society may be more tranquil and better regulated, but domestic life often has fewer charms. These, however, are secondary evils, which may be braved for the sake of higher interests. A democratic education is indispensable to protect women from the dangers with which democratic institutions and manners surround them. But then, in America, the independence of women is irrecoverably lost in the bonds of matrimony.
But surely there are compensations.
Increased attentions from their husbands? Oh, we businessmen have no time for cooing. An American man of business so rarely shows his family a sign of tenderness and affection that there's a nickname for those households where, after an absence, the husband kisses his wife and children. We call them kissing families. Generally, of course, the first objective is trade. Everything else is subordinate. However, we don't have too many disappointments.
You mean unhappy marriages?
That's right. You see, suppose one of our young men marries a woman whose tastes and character are essentially different from his own. Well, in our way of life, he may never know it. The points of contact are so few, the sphere of action of each party so well defined by custom and law, and the occupation of the man outside the house so constant that he may become the father of a large family and die without finding out his mistake.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
Within this pragmatic society where everyone is engaged in business, American girls have theirs too, that of finding a husband. To every girl over 16, marriage is the great interest in life. In France, she desires it. In America, she hunts it.
They are quite right. It is an important question. As you know, I feel strongly that whatever affects the condition of women, their habits and their opinions, has great political importance. Women in America are the guardians of status. Equality, you see, is not quite everything. There is an aristocracy, usually of money. And woe betide the unhappy girl whose family is trying to enter the American aristocracy.
Who's that strange creature?
Where?
Over there in that horrible dress. I'm sure I've never seen her before. Do you know her?
Oh, indeed I don't. Wonder how she got here.
Don't stare at her too hard. She'll blush.
Why not? I'm sure that material's not worth 75 cents a yard.
And who's that unlicked cub that's with her?
Heaven alone knows. I dare say just come from the woods.
With his mouth full of tobacco.
I hope she isn't going to dance. If she does, I should leave the room.
I shan't stay either.
Let us look no longer on this tender victim of fashionable society. She is now only serving her apprenticeship, but she will soon rise to the rank of an ancient in the clique and then treat every newcomer in precisely the same manner she is treated now. But status in society has another aspect, which we saw at its height in a theater in Baltimore. When we first entered, I was surprised at the care with which the spectators of white skin were distinguished from the black faces. I see. In the first gallery are the whites, in the second the mulattoes, in the third the negroes.
You must realize, sir, that the dignity of the whites requires this sort of classification.
Tocqueville, look.
Where?
In the mulattoes gallery, over to the left, an extraordinarily beautiful young woman. And surely she's white.
Oh, I see her.
That woman is colored.
Colored? She is whiter than a lily.
She is colored. The tradition of the country establishes her origin, and everyone knows that she numbers a mulatto among her ancestors.
But, a little nearer the center, in the White's gallery, surely I see a face that is at least half black. Now, what is she doing there?
The lady who now attracts your attention is white.
White? Well, her complexion...
She is white. The tradition of the country says that the blood flowing in her veins is Spanish.
Social status is important, even in the land of equality. and the equality itself varies from one sphere to another. In Massachusetts, for instance, Negroes have the rights of citizenship. They may vote in elections. But prejudice is so strong that it is impossible to receive their children in schools. However, I say no more of this aspect of American society, but return to the situation of American women, who so jealously guard their division into classes. All men are equal, but you do not hear that assertion from the lips of a lady. It is almost in vain to talk of female republicanism. There exists and can exist no such being on either side of the Atlantic, for human nature is the same on both. American women are, however, also the guardians of culture, and remarkably mediocre it is.
In the United States, men rarely even read. They haven't the time. Women are charged with this duty, and they report on all political and literary publications to either their fathers or their husbands, so that the men can discuss them as if they had read them.
As for music?
As for music, well, when the music starts, it is a signal for a conversation. And this is very understandable when you have heard a certain amount of American music.
Hello, I'm Joe G.
You're a bet kisser!
From the audio blog Bored Beyond Belief. And when I'm not busy ruminating about Christian fundamentalists taking over the United States,
you need a Holy Ghost enema right up your rear end.
I spend my relaxing time listening to Kenty on The Flatus Show. Why, like you are right now.
Listen to that. Well, you know, she does her best. But how is it possible to applaud such singing as this? There is neither simplicity, nor taste, neither feeling or execution in the performance, and yet the storm of applause is not abating.
For the Lord's sake, don't say that loud enough for other people to hear you. It would deprive you, Mr. Beaumont, of many an innocent pleasure you would perhaps otherwise enjoy during your stay in the city. Our elite never forgive a difference of opinion to one of their own clique. How much more, then, must a foreigner be on his guard? You'll forgive me. In society, this is a free country, sir. Every man may do or think what he pleases, only he must not let other people know it. You might just as well attack one of our fashionable preachers.
Tocqueville got into no such difficulties. The singer, a lady about 45, Springs, is passionately fond of music, an unhappy passion, if ever there was one. She howled for 2 hours as if possessed by devils. And what was Tocqueville doing hearing all this? Seated near the piano with a smiling face, he was approving, applauding each tirade.
I was merely being polite.
And then you sat down and wrote back to our friends that America was an Eldorado for husbands.
So it is. American wives live their whole lives bounded by domesticity. Besides, I had advice.
Mr. Tocqueville, if you heard an oratorio performed by our Handel and Haydn Society, you would perhaps change your mind. That society is almost entirely composed of working men who cultivate music from taste.
What a singular society in which the laboring classes cultivate the arts from taste and in which the rich people listen to it from obligation. Oh, excuse me, sir. I've smiled long enough at this. I should be obliged to lead home. Will you accompany me?
I'd like to, but people would notice. And I live here, you know. Among the Romans, do as the Romans do. By the way, if anybody asks you about the concert, and especially about that lady, say you were delighted. That's the word now. There's no use in making yourself enemies. Delighted, sir. Don't forget.
Delighted.
Good.
Delighted. That was my advice, and very sensible, too.
And what did you really think, Tocqueville?
I was delighted. That's the word, Beaumont, delighted. After all, they are a serious nation, not given to frivolity. How can they cultivate taste? Not for a while, at any rate.
Tocqueville, you are cynical.
I assure you I am not. American society is a very remarkable thing. And its cornerstone is those very remarkable American women, the guardians of class, of culture, and above all, the guardians of morality. Men and women are both considered beings of equal value. And as for myself, though I do not hesitate to avow that the women of the United States are confined within the narrow circle of domestic life, and their situation is in some respects one of extreme dependence, I have nowhere seen women occupying a loftier position. And if I were asked, finally, to what the singular prosperity and growing strength of the Americans ought mainly to be attributed, I should reply, to the superiority of their women.
Are you tired of being alone? Not anymore. You can be Kenty's internet boyfriend. Just send Kenty an email or a voicemail declaring such and a picture, and Kenty will proudly display his bevy of boyfriends in a special photo album. Now you can tell people you have a boyfriend. An internet boyfriend. There is no obligation to have sex with Kenty, go on dates, remember birthdays or anniversaries. It's that easy. Be Kenty's internet boyfriend today. And now, girls can join as well. Void where prohibited by law. Only on The Flatus Show.
Just what love will do. Love may live a day or all life through.
Jack and Joan by Thomas Campion. Jack and Joan, they think no ill, but loving live and merry still, do their weekdays work and pray devoutly on the holy day, skip and trip it on the green, and help to choose the summer queen, lash out at the country feast their silver penny with the best. Well, can they judge of nappy ale and tell at large a winter's tale, climb up to the apple loft and turn the crabs till they be soft? Tib is all the father's joy, and little Tom the mother's boy. All their pleasure is content, and care to pay their yearly rent. Joan can call by name her cows, and deck her window with green boughs. She can wreaths and tutties make, and trim with plums a bridal cake. Jack knows what brings gain or loss, and his long flail can stoutly toss. Makes the hedge which others break, and ever thinks what he doth speak. Now, you courtly dames and knights, that study only strange delights, though you scorn the homespun gray, and revel in your rich array, though your tongues dissemble deep, and can your heads from danger keep, yet for all your pomp and train, secure lives the silly swain. You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
A man only counts for what he himself is worth.
How do the wealthy classes like this?
Well, you might as well put up with it, since there's no way of preventing it.
But in that case, is there not hard feeling between the wealthy classes and the rest of the people?
None whatsoever. All classes, without exception, took part in the War of Independence. Since then, the power of democracy has been so great and so invincible that no one has spoken against it. And in general, the people as a whole elect to office the wealthiest and the best educated.
Oh, I see.